Bibles and turn to John's Gospel, chapter number 5, and we'll read down through verse 16. I have sort of titled the Gospel of John as the Gospel of the Man Whose Minutes Were Measured. And the reason being is because throughout this gospel, as early as chapter number 2, he deals with mine hour. He said, mine hour is not yet come. And then in chapter 17, when he prays, he said, mine hour is come. He was aware that he was only going to be here a certain time in this world. And he had a certain purpose. And that's really true of all of us. We all have an hour. But Jesus was divinely aware of that. And constantly it was on his mind. So I don't think he wasted any time. He came with the pursuit of the obedience of the Father, the sacrifice for you and I for salvation. And he kept that was his focus. Boy, if we could find our focus in this world for God and just stay on that, we wouldn't waste all the time, I guess, that we each have to waste. All that wood, hay, and stubble. But I want to deal with chapter number 5 with one of the miracles that Jesus performed for as long as he'll let me preach on it this week. And one of the things that Jesus did during his hours here is that he performed miracles. These miracles of the man whose minutes were measured. None of these miracles are by happenstance. He's not casting pearl before swine. He's not trial and error. But he has certain places that he's going to do certain miracles. And I want us to look at this one as what I would call the miracle of grace. The miracle of grace. And of course, I would expand that to say that really every miracle that God performs on anybody is a miracle of grace, because we none merit those miracles. But especially this miracle we're going to notice, because Jesus himself is grace in its fullest sense. And so let's look down through this miracle here. Reading down through verse 16, the Bible said, after this there was a feast of the Jews, and Jesus went up to Jerusalem. Now there is at Jerusalem by the sheep market a pool which is called in the Hebrew tongue Bethesda, which means kindness or grace, having five porches. In these lay a great multitude of impotent folk, of blind, halt, withered, waiting for the moving of the water. For an angel went down at a certain season into the pool and troubled the water. Whosoever then first at the troubling of the water stepped in was made whole of whatsoever disease he had. A certain man was there which had an infirmity 38 years. When Jesus saw him lie and knew that he had been now a long time in that case, he said unto him, wilt thou be made whole? The impotent man answered him, sir, I have no man when the water is troubled to put me into the pool, but while I am coming, another steppeth down before me. Jesus saith unto him, rise, take up thy bed and walk. And immediately the man was made whole and took up his bed and walked. On the same day was the Sabbath. The Jews therefore said unto him that was cured, it is the Sabbath day, it is not lawful for thee to carry thy bed. He answered them, he that made me whole, the same said unto me, take up thy bed and walk. Then asked they him, what man is this that would said unto thee, take up thy bed and walk? And he that was healed wist not who it was, for Jesus had conveyed himself away, a multitude being in that place. Afterward, Jesus findeth him in the temple and saith unto him, Behold, thou art made whole. Sin no more, lest a worse thing come unto thee. The man departed and told the Jews that it was Jesus which had made him whole. Therefore did the Jews persecute Jesus and sought to slay him, because he had done these things on the Sabbath day. I want us to look at this text for a few moments this morning with this thought of grace. Of course, Jesus being the fullness of grace, it's at Bethesda, which means kindness or grace. There are five porches there. Five is always the number of grace. When Jesus speaks to him, wilt thou be made whole, he uses five words there, which is an indication of grace. And of course, we know as a whole, again, any miracle is any work of God in your heart is undeserved or mine. Whether it be physical or spiritual, it has to be a work of grace. And of course, when we look to God, we look not for reward or for merit or whatever. We look to God for grace. Yes. And of course, he is called the God of what? The God of grace. And so he has ample grace. And I'm glad that he is willing to extend that grace toward you and toward me. But as I look at this text for a moment this morning, I want to sort of lay the foundation, and I want to look at what I would call, ironically, the absence of grace, or the destitution of grace, the want of grace, or evident from our text, if anything was ever needed here, it certainly was grace. But yet it is so circumstances, it seems to be so absent or so wanting of grace. Let's just look down through this text and see where grace is not, or it doesn't seem to be found. First of all, I notice in the description there is an absence, a destitution, or a want of grace. This place, if you'll look verse number 2, now there is at Jerusalem by the sheep market a pool, which is called in the Hebrew tongue Bethesda, having five porches. Verse 3, in these lay a great multitude of impotent or powerless folks, of blind, halt, they can't walk, withered, paralyzed, waiting for the moving of the water. Now you'd have to admit with me that if you were to walk into what I would call a ward of a hospital, and you were to see this many people in this shape, you would certainly feel as though that there was a great need there, because there is a lacking or a wanting of health, of strength, of power. There is a lacking of grace that would seem to be needed to be extended. When we think about this ward, this extension of the hospital, if you visited hospitals, you especially in those very serious places, you have the extensions for those that have head trauma, for those that have heart conditions, for those that are terminally ill with cancer and things. And those are very, and all pastors know this, and all families that have had to go visit their loved ones. These are sad places to have to go to. And we think about the circumstances and what brought them there and what got them in this shape. And there just doesn't seem to be a spirit of healing, a spirit of grace in those situations. It is a place of withered people, a place of weak people, a place that people that are just waiting to see what's going to develop out of the situation. Even when we think about the title of the place, it almost seems as though that it is a mockery of the need. It is why this place called Bethesda, this place called kindness, this place called grace, mercy. And yet all of this is in this one place. It seems to be a contradiction of what it is called and then what the need is. The description of it is not a description of which you would think or would make you think of grace. It's almost like a sarcasm, a scorning, so to speak. That is the description of this place. And you make application in your world when we look around us, whether we're talking about America or another country. All of these things exist in this world. That's why that you've got so many people who would deny that there is even a God or deny that there is a God who cares, because they look upon the circumstances and they say, well, how could there be a God? You say this is a church. You say this is Bethesda. You say that there are angels. You say that there are special healings. But look at the circumstances. Look at all of the heartache and the pain that is all around us, and we none can deny that it exists. It's almost as if there's no grace in these situations. Whether we're talking about hospitals or whether we're talking about the ministry of prisons or jails that is represented here, the ministry of poverty and of want, certainly the world has all of that in great amount and degrees. It would make us say, well, where is grace if it exists, and why are circumstances like they are? It just seems like it paints a picture of a graceless situation. But not only that, the description seems to have no grace in it. The delay seems to have no grace in it. If you look, the Bible said the only thing that they can do is wait. There is a time schedule that really has no time in it. You just go and sit by the pool of water and you wait. I know the Bible's filled with this truth of waiting upon the Lord, but it's the hardest thing that we do. It's easy to tell somebody else to wait, but when you get in your own circumstances, there doesn't seem any grace in waiting on something, waiting to find out what the report is, waiting to see what's going to happen as far as the loved one and the condition they're in, waiting to see if that child is in the far-off country is going to come to his senses and come back home. Waiting, we're just waiting to see what's going to happen. And in a number of situations, there just seems to be an absence of any kind of hope or grace or mercy when we just have to wait on what seems to be so horrible to change. And humanity is not given to waiting. I don't like to wait. And you have to wait in ridiculous places. I mean, think about it. There ought to be some places that you just shouldn't have to wait. McDonald's, for instance. You wait in line. There's 8 people in front of you. The guy or the lady, whoever in front of you, when once they've taken care of the other 7, it gets to that person, and then it's like they haven't even thought about what they wanted to eat. Now they're going to look up there and say, well, let me see. Well, the problem with that I have is McDonald's has not changed its menu in 50 years. It's not like you have to really think about something. Just, you know, get a hamburger or Kentucky Fried Chicken. I mean, why would you have to wait at Kentucky Fried Chicken? Somebody goes up to the line and they say, well, you know, what do you get at Kentucky Fried Chicken? You get chicken. I'll get you some chicken. Some kind of chicken, and move out of the way. Or going to Walmart. Always I get behind this dear lady who pushes the cart up and then she puts what's on there. She really doesn't have that much. But she'll wait till it's all rung up and then the price is right there. And then it dawns on her. She thinks, I got to go into my billfold or in my pocketbook and get my billfold. And she just, you know, it gets the billfold out. And then it's not just like, you know, write a check real quick. No, they have to open up and spread it out and mash it down. And then they have to write it just right. And then they have to easily, where's another line at? Well, I'm not glorifying that. I'm just simply saying, isn't it true? Who likes to stop behind someone at a red light and the light turns green? I said the other day, hey, buddy, it ain't going to get no greener. It's time to move on. And we can laugh about those tangible things, but isn't it so in our spiritual life how many times we've just waited and waited and waited we just waited for that person's life to change. We've waited for that prodigal son to come home. We've waited for that doctor's report. We've waited. My life has made so much of a waiting, but that waiting doesn't seem to have a touch of grace about it, especially when the conditions are as bad as they are. And the Bible said this man has been in this condition. I don't know how long he's been by this pool. I don't know how often he goes over there, but he has had this condition 38 years. If there was any hope, it seems to all have been diminished. And what are they waiting on? More trouble. The water has to be troubled. It just seems like there is no end. Then I notice not only is the description, it seems to have no grace about it. The delay seems to have no grace about it. Then the details seem to have no grace about it. Look at it. It's almost like it's a race. There is this has produced an atmosphere of competition. An atmosphere of competition. Look at it. Notice what the details of this place, this circumstance is. The Bible said, in verse number 7, the impotent man answered him, "Sir, I have no man when the water is troubled to put me into the pool. But while I am coming, another steppeth down before me." You see, the details of this situation, this circumstance, this place, where everybody is waiting on the same thing, is that only the person who is fast is going to get. It's almost like an evolutionary thing, the survival of the fittest. You're going to have to walk over top of grandma if you get what you want. I mean, you just have to step on somebody. They get in your way, you just have to push them out of the way. I can't imagine that there was much of a spirit of fellowship or camaraderie, unless they were talking about each other's illnesses, but because they can't trust each other. You can sit around and talk to one another and say, "How you doing?" But in the back of your mind, you're thinking, if that water stirs, he's going to jump out in front of me. I know he is, huh? Yeah. He just got through saying he thought a lot of me and always had and loved my family. But now when that water stirs, I know what he's going to do. He's going to push me up. He'll knock me down. He'll crawl over top of me. I can't even get up. No way. He said, "There's just nobody. I don't have no kinfolk, and if they are kinfolk, they don't care about me because they're trying to take care of themselves." It seems like the delay, the demand, the details of the situation. You've got to be first. You've got to be out in front. You've got to be fast. And then you've got to have no feeling whatsoever for anybody else. There has to be an absence of compassion for others who are in as bad a shape as you are or worse than you are. Isn't that the way the world is? It's only here that we come and sing and tell about how we love one another. When we get out there, the race is on, buddy. You just better watch out. I'm going to get there before you can, if I can. I mean, that's the spirit and the attitude of this world. And besides that, if you've got to be fast, you've got to be out in front, you've got to be first, you can't have any feelings about anybody else. The great difficulty that this guy has is that he can't even walk. can't even walk. The details is you, if you get there first, buddy, it's yours. But how are you going to get there first when you can't even get there last? Because you cannot walk. Well, doesn't that describe the human nature itself? It's a picture of humanity lost. Can't even walk, let alone get there. I mean, he's not even going to get there last, let alone first, unless somebody does something for him. Years ago, I read of a certain man had his head cut off. It was a folklore story that somebody had his head cut off, and after they cut his head off, he picked up his head and walked 1,000 miles. I've shared that story with people that didn't believe it. I don't have any problem believing that. My problem is that believing that after they cut his head off, he couldn't even move a muscle. Flinch. If that man with his head cut off could move a muscle, I have no problem believing he can get up and walk 1,000 miles. It's just moving the muscle. I'm going to tell you something. There is nothing within us that gives us the ability to move that in any case would help ourselves, let alone toward God. This man has no hope in his condition. It's not so much he's not even in the race. He doesn't realize it. He's not even in the race. There's no way he's going to get out in front. He can't even move. I wonder why he's even there. It's just a hope that maybe somebody will come and somebody will help him and throw him into the water. So it seems as though we're in a graceless situation. As far as the description is concerned, the definition is concerned, the delay is concerned, the details are concerned, and then even after grace shows up, we notice that there is no grace even in the day. Jesus had a bad habit of working on the Sabbath, and the disciples didn't like it. Notice it. Jesus saith unto him, Arise, take up thy bed. And immediately the man was made whole, took up his bed and walked. And then the scripture throws this in. The same day was the Sabbath. And then in verse number 10, the Jews therefore said unto him that was cured, It is a Sabbath day. It is not lawful for thee to carry thy bed. Well, I want to say to you that this matter of the law, the Pharisees had taken the law and put it in contention with Christ. But they were the ones that did that. I want to suggest to you, and we have this mentality that somehow Christ was against the law and the law was against Christ. No. Not in any fashion. He came to fulfill that law. He was the author of that law. But yet they wanted to tinker with things. The problem with religion is religion will wait around until something happens then go to tinkering with it.
You're right.
Because religion can't do anything.
Right.
Now they've been in and out of there and they've been around all them people. They hadn't done a thing because they couldn't do a thing.
Right.
But then when something does happen, they go to tinkering with it. Humanity tinkers with creation. What's it come up with? No God. Humanity tinkers around with religion, and then what's it come up with? No God. Just drains God out of all the situations and scenarios, and so it goes to tinkering. Of course, when religion goes to tinkering with things, it just makes it one big gob of a mess. It's kind of like government. Anytime government handles anything, it turns into a gob of a mess. And now, in the Old Testament, of course, you have the Ten Commandments, and in totality, I think there's 300 and some commandments. They take each one of those commandments and tinker with them and make them swell and build fences around them. In other words, in the Old Testament, if there was a commandment that you couldn't touch this, they'd build this to keep you from getting to this. But the only problem is they put more importance on this than they would this. Because it was their custom, their rules, that they had brought up in custom and tradition. So when Jesus comes and heals on the Sabbath day, but I'm going to tell you something. If Jesus heals on the Sabbath day, then there ain't no law that's against him healing on the Sabbath day. Because he's the Lord of the Sabbath. And so all of these, they're not interested in the real commandment. They're interested in what they've tinkered with, what they've come up with. Thousands and thousands by the time that Christ came, thousands and thousands of laws. Fence laws. By the way, of which they never abided by, but they wanted everybody else to abide by. And here is this poor soul that needs to be healed, and they got nothing good to say about the fact that something good has happened in his life. It's just the fact that what has happened is against their religious tradition. They've tinkered with it and made as if by their law that the law was anti-Christ and that Christ had broken the law. He never breaks the law. He always fulfills the law. But then notice with me, if you will, the day was destitute of grace. The disease itself was destitute, seemingly, of grace, because when Jesus shows back up in verse number 14, we realize what the root and the cause of it is. And it is the root and cause of every disease, either in a direct way or indirect way. Afterwards, Jesus findeth him in the temple and saith unto him, now it's bad enough that he can't walk. There seems to be an absence of grace in the fact that he can't even move. He can't even compete. That even the day is against him, and the details, everything, the delay, 38 years. Afterward, Jesus findeth him in the temple and saith to him, behold, thou art made whole. And then here we have this phrase, sin no more, lest a worse thing come unto thee. In other words, Jesus reveals something that we wouldn't have known, and that is the heart of this thing is sin. The heart of this thing is sin. And brothers and sisters, I wonder if the sin was remedied in many lives and how much physical desperation that would take care of. How many homes would that deliver from sorrow as a result of the drug addict or whatever the sin may be in our lives? So it just seems as though if you look upon the horizontal, and that's what we're prone to do. I'm talking about in your life, my life, anybody's life. What we're introduced to in this text as far as the setting of this miracle, we're introduced to the horizontal, what the human eye can see. And of course, when the human eye begins to analyze and begins to diagnose and begins to muse over things, we always seem to come away with a feeling of hopelessness, and is almost just a sad tale of no grace. Again, when we come to the house of God, it's all grace, and we just want to talk about how big God is. But if you really want to find out how you feel about things, let's tape yourself after the evening meal as you sit around and talk about circumstances and situations in your life or in the community. It's all just no grace. Now somebody say amen if that ain't so. Is that true? It's after you get done eating. You sit around talking. You say, well, man, it's bad what happened to old Bill, wasn't it? Man, I couldn't believe it. They say that it's going to be that way, and it looks like it is. Now, you know, that's just the way, I don't know. Isn't that the way we discuss it? Because that's the way it is. Read the newspaper about what happened out there in Colorado. Terrible, terrible. And we've all talked about it on the level of what we could see right there, and that's all that we know. I mean, I ain't seen no grace in that at all. None at all. I don't know about you, but I just can't see nothing in it. An idiot coming in, shooting a bunch and killing the 6-year-old girl and all that other stuff, that's terrible. Terrible. And that's all the news we get, and that's just the way it is. That's just the way it is. It just don't seem to be. It's just the truth of the matter. My goodness, look at it. You say, all right, preacher, you made us see that there ain't much grace. Well, I did that because that's the truth of the matter. That's just where it lies. But here's what I want you to see. In the midst of that absence of grace, look what's moving in that direction. After this, there was a feast of the Jews, and Jesus went up to Jerusalem. You see, all stories have a bad ending. And there's really not a lot of hope in wars and sickness and death and all that other stuff. It is bad, bad, bad. Unless Jesus steps into the mix. And brothers and sisters, when he gets in the midst of the worst of situation, grace begins to flow. Because that's what comes out of him is grace. And isn't it true that he in your life and my life, as we'll deal with later, has stepped in to our situations, and thank God we noticed that grace began to surface to the top. Look in verse number 8. I'm thinking about how that there was no grace in the delays. There was no grace in the delays. Verse number 8, I mean, this guy's been here 38 years. And somebody said, it's terrible. Hey, have you heard about it? Is he any better? No. Does he still go down there at that pool? Looks like it's a waste of time. He lays down on that same mat every time I go by there and talk to him. Ain't nothing changed. Nothing changed 38 years. Verse 8, and Jesus saith unto him, rise, take up thy bed. Look in verse 9. There's no appointment. There's no time set for the future. There is no prescription. And immediately. Brothers and sisters, that's grace. When Jesus steps into the situation, it ain't going to be 38 years before he gets things settled. Hallelujah. It ain't going to be 38 days. It ain't going to be 38 minutes. It ain't going to be 38 seconds. And immediately. You see, the whole situation here that seems so gracious can be answered when Christ steps into it. Because then, he is able to take care of the situation. When he gets there, it's over. And immediately, he took up his bed and walked. 14 years of my life was raised in a hellish situation. But I'm going to tell you, that day Jesus showed up. He took 14 years and turned it all around and immediately made the difference. And immediately, anon in other places he says, instantaneously, no way to measure it in time. I remember a lady talking about when she got saved at an old-fashioned camp meeting. She was in school. They would cut out school and go to that that tent meeting, and you had to walk across a log that was a creek there. And she said, I'd go every day as a young girl, the school would walk across that log. And she said, every day I got more and a conviction. I couldn't even sleep at night. And she said, one morning I got up and said, we started across that log, the school did. And she said, when I stepped on that log, if I'd have died, I'd have went to hell. But she said, when I stepped off that log, if I'd have died, I went to heaven. Somewhere in between a 4-foot log stretch, everything changed in her world. Oh yeah, that prodigal son's down there and he ain't got no sense. He's wasted everything he ever had. Boom. Came to himself and the whole world changed. You see, the only hope that we really have is that Jesus would step into the mix of our situations and then we'll know that things have changed. Boy, Jesus stepped into the midst. And there was grace. There was grace. And what about the demands again? He's got to be first. He's got to be fast. He's got to be out in front, but he can't walk. But when Jesus said to him, rise, that word has within it the same power that the words had in them when Jesus said to Lazarus, come forth. Same power was operating on his behalf in a word that was operating on the behalf of Lazarus. Which suggests to me, as Paul said concerning, he said, I'm not ashamed of the gospel, for it is the power, the dynamite of God unto salvation. Jesus walked by there and he said, all this guy needs is an explosion. Yeah. We need to have some dynamite go off in this place. Yes, sir. And he said to him, arise! And the very power of that word energized that man to do what it was impossible, not virtually impossible, but impossible. He could not move. He said, you get up out of there. Take up your bed and begin an action that you've never been able to do. An activity that has not been present in your life. And walk. Move. Set out. And here this man, who had been in a world of gracelessness because of one word. It seemed as though that all of the details and all of the demands just melted away. As a matter of fact, 4 different times in this scripture, the word whole is mentioned. Somebody said, why? Because God wanted him to know and everybody else to know that this man had been completed. He had been made whole. There was nothing else left to do. Ooh, boy. Don't you like to get to those places in your life where there's nothing else left to do? Because he already did it all. Nothing else left to do. Rise and take up thy bed and walk. It seems as though that grace has blossomed in the midst of weeds and bulrushes and unsoiled ground. Here comes grace flowing. Why? Because Jesus has stepped into the situation. He has made him whole. Made him whole. Now look at this in verse number 3. In these lay a great multitude of impotent folk, blind, halt, wither, waiting on the moving of the water. Jesus brought grace at the right time for the right need. And grace delivered this man. I don't know that I ever run into a person that didn't need God's grace. But I'm going to tell you something. I never ran into a man that I didn't realize that it was going to take God's grace to deliver that man. I've thought and always do about my own circumstances. I'll close with this, but I'm so glad that Jesus came up. I can imagine afterwards people interviewing this guy. I mean, a lot of people probably talked to him. Man, what happened to you? I mean, how in the world? I've been by that place. Man, I never did like to go over there. Them people, they sit there so long, they ain't been bathed, and they don't smell good, and they don't look good. And you see how some of them are just so bad of shape. It's bad over there. I didn't see nothing good over there. Well, that's true for the most part. But honey, if Jesus walks through your situation, the whole thing changes. The whole thing changes. But as I look back upon my own raising, somebody asked me here a while back, said, did you miss not having a mother? I said, how do you miss something you never had? But how can you not have something that's so important in your life and not be dysfunctional? Yeah, you just got to be dysfunctional. Now, don't ask me what I'm in a dysfunctional at. I'm just dysfunctional, I'm sure. Yeah, I ask Esther and several preachers. Ernie will tell you. And then been raised where the whole influence was alcohol for all of my brothers and sisters. Married three as a result of it, brothers, and got a sister that's got cirrhosis of the liver, got a brother that's near death with cirrhosis of the liver. It's been a vice through my family through the years. And as I've often said, no gospel, no prayer, no name of Jesus, never. I never remember hearing it unless it was in vain. No Bible, no word of God. If there ever was a life that was for 14 years with an absence, total absence. In other words, there was just no way to look at it and say that there was any grace in it at all. My life was headed down the same road as all the rest of my family would have ended in the same way. But one day, Jesus stepped into my world and took all of that and somehow made grace out of it. Isn't that amazing? And the only reason why I'm not as dysfunctional as I ought to be is because grace come in and remedied. Could you begin to imagine what you would be, where you would be, if Jesus hadn't stepped into your world? The songwriter said it right when he said, grace that is greater than all my sin. But can I add this to it? Grace that is greater than all my sickness, my sorrow, my suffering. And the key to it is the Bible said, and Jesus went up to Jerusalem But he not only went up, he went in. And did a work that only he can do. He said, "Preacher, there's just been so many situations of late that just seem to be so devastating, so dark, so dismal, so graceless." You know why? Because they are. They are. We're living in a hopeless, helpless world. It's as bad as they say it is. America's is in a bad shape as they say it is. Worse! Circumstances and situations that you all know about is in as bad a shape and worse than you can think. But instead of sitting around thinking about all that, let it be our prayer that Jesus would step into it. And what a difference. The songwriter said, "What a difference he made my life. Grace, amazing grace. How sweet, sweet the sound that saved a what? Don't sound like much grace in that. But Jesus can make the difference." Let's stand.